Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's out of mouths times. It's Football Ramble.
Yeah.
Lovely to have you with us. And I've also got James or Jim with me.
Hello.
Pete Donaldson.
What do you want?
And Luke Moore.
All right.
Lovely to have you, gentle people. We're going to start off talking about Wayne Rooney. He's been in the press, but not for what I'm about to ask you. What was your favourite Rooney goal? From the man's career.
Yeah.
Well, that's why we have to remember these things.
My memory's not what it was.
Yeah. He's not just a football agent or whatever he's become of late.
No, or just a romping love rat.
My favourite Wayne Rooney goal is...
Do you work for the tabloids
goal,
now, do you?
Well, I'm trying to get a gig there, actually. My favourite Wayne Rooney goal is a goal he scored against Portsmouth in the FA Cup, which is a delightful little chip from the edge of the area. I'm not sure what season it was. It was a couple of years ago, I think, and...
Yeah, it wasn't the season when they won the cup, was it, Luke?
No,
it wasn't.
You don't see enough tight chips anymore.
No.
Cantona loved them.
Rooney's the only player I can think of that consistently tries to deliver them. Mm-hmm. Certainly in England.
I remember Hunter last scoring a great one for Milan.
He did, yeah.
Who scored the one for Fulham last season in the UEFA
Cup? Oh, Dempsey.
Cup? Dempsey.
Yeah. Ah, that was a beauty.
He's got a lovely one.
But we're talking about Rooney.
You get a lot of chips these days, don't you?
Yeah, good start. A lovely little chip from Rooney.
Ah, Richard.
Petey?
Ah, Richard.
Oh, he literally loves chips.
Richard.
Pete's turn.
Come on now. I'm going to go for his first goal for Everton when he was only 16.
Oh my goodness.
Where he managed to side foot the ball more powerfully than anyone ever. Past David Seaman, top left.
Off
beautiful.
Off the bar. Can you remember the commentary?
Overrated.
Remember the name!
Wayne Rooney.
I know his name is Wayne.
Yeah. It's an awful name. I'm not going to forget that. Seriously, it's a bad name.
That was
it?
He nearly scored a chip in that game after that goal, I think.
The confidence.
I think he chipped Seaman and it went on the roof of the net.
Yeah.
I'm going to say...
Not for the first time.
He was
not sure what I mean by that.
I didn't say lob.
Well, it doesn't work. But, you know, he's one of the only players that tries chips. It's not working, but I'm running with it.
Yeah.
I wish you would. P-Luke.
P-Luke. Hello.
P-Luke.
I'm P-Luke.
P-Diddy.
I shall go for the amazing volley he scored against Newcastle when they were a goal down at Old Trafford, and he was like remonstrating with the ref.
Yeah.
And he noticed the ball was near it, popped up, and he volleyed it in the top corner and just went off. Amazing.
Yeah,
there's a certain angle of that when you see just exactly how tightly it was in the top corner. It's just it curls so perfectly into the exact top corner.
If you ever need an example of how he's such an instinctive, naturally gifted player, that is a perfect example.
Can I say he stuffed it in the top
corner? He stuffed it in the top corner, yeah.
He did. Yeah, no, as you say, Luke, he was arguing the ref, and he was fuming, and then he saw the ball, and he just took it. That could have been a man.
He was
lucky the ball's... And even when he scored, he ran over and he kicked the ball again back in the net.
That's right.
Yeah. He was fuming. He didn't smile.
And they were a goal down at the time, and they won the game as well.
They won 2-1, I think. Yeah. I'm going to go for another Rooney volley.
Well, it's got to be a Rooney goal. So.
And, yeah, well, it's my question. I'll do what I like. I'm going to go for the goal Alan Shearer scored. Thank you. Wayne Rooney scored a volley against Middlesbrough, I think it was. Mm. Do you remember Old Trafford?
Go on.
It was a volley. It went between the posts. It smashed in. It wasn't the far.
It's like D.H. Lawrence, isn't
similar.
It?
I think it was a similar... What was that comment?
It's like D.H. Lawrence, isn't it? Your descriptions. It was a volley, wasn't it?
It was definitely Wayne... So if you can imagine, Wayne Rooney on a football pitch, Middlesbrough players, volley.
Yeah,
didn't even commit to Middlesbrough. I think it was Middlesbrough.
No, it was Middlesbrough.
He definitely used a ball to score.
Am I going to be allowed?
Let him carry on. Don't restrict him.
I think I'll have the points.
One thing is worth mentioning about Pete's decision.
Stop turning up.
Pete's choice of Rooney's goal is that just before he scored the goal, I'm not sure if you guys remember, but the way he brought the ball down for a 16-year-old over his shoulder, amazing touch, killed it dead. Wow. And then the rest is history.
He was a marked man since then.
Remember the name, that's remember the game.
When Rooney really spanks a football, I just imagine he goes poof. I can imagine him saying that. He just puffs his cheeks out, doesn't he?
The team I used to play for, our goalkeeper, every time he cleared the ball, when he was just going to smash it upfield, he'd shout mega kick as he kicked it.
Mega kick.
And I can imagine Rooney doing that in his head.
I reckon Rooney goes poof la.
But you actually remember that one he scored on his debut from the Champions League? Was it his debut?
We got a
hat
trick.
Was it debut for United or the Champions League debut? Certainly.
Champions League debut, definitely. Yeah,
and
it might have been Doug overall. It was okay.
That was Roy the Rover stuff. And there was one where he smashed it in the bottom corner, and the ball was just like fizzing in the net. It was ridiculous.
Like it's just come out from another dimension.
like Michael Jackson's feet in Moonwalker. Where glitter comes out of it.
Exactly.
Do you think Colleen worries when she sees him in this mood? It's like, God. Yeah. What's he so angry about? Is this going to carry on? Well, it's just finish if they
it's
win.
It's just the energy, isn't it? You know that I've heard reports that Michael Essien has got so much energy that after a full game
he goes
for like a run.
Really?
Yeah, because he's got so much energy left over still.
He also sleeps about 16 hours a day or something.
Michael Essien?
A lot of sleep 16 hours a day.
A lot of footballers sleep in the afternoon as well for training.
That's right. Mm. The old footballing siesta. Right, well, I'm sure we'll come on to Wayne Rooney soon enough, but we're going to start by talking about Liverpool. They won a game.
They did.
They beat Blackburn at home. They looked good, actually, Liverpool, didn't they?
It's worth pointing out they actually played very well as well. And I mean, obviously, they did concede, but it was Jamie Carragher's obligatory liability goal that he has to get in every season.
It was one of the most against-the-run-of-play goals for Blackburn I've seen for a long time. Liverpool absolutely dominated.
Yeah, they just didn't turn up, did they?
There's a lovely bit on 6-6 where the obligatory, I've watched this club for 20 million years, and it was just like, we just got to get rid of him now. We got to get rid of him. I would never usually slag him off, but I am on the verge of tears now. Crying about Carragher.
Oh, God. It was great because it got cleared up a lot, hit him in the face and went.
Well, he's got that famous record, isn't he? That he is the top scorer against Liverpool Anfield.
We did it as a trivia question on the show, didn't we?
Yeah. Sorry, go on, Jim.
Well, he wants that record, doesn't he? Because Richard Dunn scored an own goal the day before, which takes him to 8, and I think that makes him top of the Premier League.
It is, yeah.
It's like Carragher's gone, whoa, he's getting too far ahead.
It was very much an own goal.
I saw the list of own goals in the Premier League.
Fernand was on 5, I think.
Yeah, I was disappointed to see Frank Sinclair so low down. He got quite a few back in the day.
He got loads in quick succession one season.
He's like the Mr. Miyagi of it. Carragher's learnt a lot from him.
Yeah.
With the Carragher own goal, it was like if you sat down like a table like we are now and said, right, what is the most undignified way you can think of an own goal? Well, the bloke who's really much better than you kicking it in your face and it going in.
I quite liked West Brom's own goal this weekend.
Carlson,
off the back of his head. It was such a good save.
It's so unfortunate when that happens to him.
It happens reasonably often. I mean, it's happened to Paul Robinson before, who had a great game for Blackburn. I mean, you know, he was the only reason they didn't lose by 4 or 5.
It was nice to see old Roy Hodgson come off the bench when Torres scores, and really he gritted his teeth and clenched his fist, and I thought he hasn't done that, and maybe he's responding there because people said he looked a bit lost in the Everton game, and so maybe he's trying to be a little bit more emotional. Well, I don't know.
Gerrard was saying after the game, isn't he, they basically decided this is ridiculous now. We've got to start playing, and they actually did.
People are beginning to notice, lads.
I mean, another win and they're up to 7th, I think.
They knock the ball around nicely, and if they win a couple more on the spin, which is not out of the question, it's Liverpool, for God's sake. They can get right.
Maxi Rodriguez looks as though he was awake this time.
It's nice of him.
It was indeed. I thought they had a good point in Napoli.
Yes.
Napoli would be the Italian, the proper version of Napoli, so to speak. So I was correct.
Napoli did all right. They played Milan tonight. They're 6th.
Yeah, that's
Cavani's got really hit the ground running there. He's got a few already. I think he's got 5 or 6 goals already this season.
Can we also say that Bruce Dickinson, the Iron Maiden frontman, flew Liverpool out there?
Yeah. He's a proper pilot.
Yeah.
They don't just picked him up.
He works a version at Manchester.
Stephen Gerrard wanted Phil Collins.
He's Def Leppard next week. Yeah.
Did he punch Bruce Dickinson when he turned out not to be Phil Collins?
No, he punched him when he wouldn't put Phil Collins on the plane stereo.
Oh, dear. Of course, we were playing Pick Live that night, Luke.
Yes, I was. It was Manchester City versus Lech Poznan in the Europa League.
Europa League.
And I won the big game. £23. Thank you very much. Stick it in the back burner.
Yeah.
I've lost all my money.
The listeners who came along thinking, oh, it's only Lukey Moore playing, we'll easily win. Because you were given it the bigger licks last week. They're noticeable by their absence tonight, aren't they? Where are they?
Because they usually turn up to recording. I don't know what happened because we were playing and you kept tweeting away. Oh, and then a lovely little twist right at the end. Lukey Moore finishes first and Marcus Bella finishes 38th.
Yeah.
How does that happen?
Which is, by the way, is the 37th loser.
Yeah.
But I have to say...
That is a marked improvement for me.
I'm duty bound to say that it was actually joint top with someone else. But I can't remember who it was. I should have made a note of it. There was definitely a team called Nikola Zigic's Crash Helmet there or thereabouts.
Oh, nice.
I don't think he was. I don't think he won though.
Oh, very good. But yeah, as we say, get involved with the old Pick Live.
TheFootballRamble.picklive.com.
Yeah.
Win real money. Unless I'm playing, then you'll definitely lose.
Wanker.
Yeah.
do try and knock him off his perch.
Big perch. Long.
Also, over the weekend, Manchester United beat Stoke 2-1, and Rooney staying.
Well, he's staying, but he's having a week holiday.
Is he?
Yeah.
He's got Qatar, isn't he?
Or something like that.
Yeah. He's got a bad leg, so he's gone on holiday for a week.
Yeah.
Big planes if you're rich, it's fine.
That's a PR disaster, in my opinion.
Yeah.
The whole thing is just absurd, isn't it?
But he should at least have gone along and sat in the stand and showed that he's committed
to a little bit of solidarity. Well, yeah. It's been a week of brinkmanship, like Portsmouth, it seems, that they're trying to sort of sell themselves further than they can.
If you went over Portsmouth in the plane, like the back end last week, you'd have just seen loads of dirty washing. Being in public.
It could well be the case that Rooney makes his comeback against City, which would be interesting.
That'd be great.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how the United fans are going to react to him.
Who's going
to
give him the most stick?
Be pissed off. Exactly, yeah.
It's funny. It's a weird week. It's been a weird week.
Do you know what? I said this to you on the way up here, Luke, that it reminded me of how much, you can be a bit of a miserable old sod at times, but it reminded me actually how much respect and how much I like Alex Ferguson in the recent, in light of recent events.
I mean, lots of people hate on him, but, you know, you've got to really, really appreciate and respect what he's done. And he's the manager you'd want. If you were owning the club and there was a crisis of this nature, Alex Ferguson would be the man you wanted.
He was bewildered by the whole thing. I genuinely think he was.
There's still talk that they've sat down and he said to Rooney, look, sign a contract, we'll sell you on later, you'll still get your move, we'll get more money for it.
I think there's a bit of truth in that, but one thing I wanted to ask you boys was last week I was the only one saying that I thought he actually would go, and you guys said it's just a ruse to get more money basically. But do you actually think he would have gone? Do you actually think that
I didn't think he was trying to get more money. I think that maybe off field events and happenings and whatnot, I think he probably just thought, sod this, I want to get out.
I think he was outplayed by Alex, to be honest. He just sort of said we'll contract him and his agent. Is it Stretford?
Awful piece of work he is.
They tried to just get as much money as they possibly could, and then they sort of and then Ferguson called his bluff and stuck it in the newspaper.
Just got to go down as like the biggest diva strop in history. It's just incredible.
Since your last one on the Ram.
I just think Rooney panicked, or not panicked, just had a... He thought about things and maybe the agent's been talking to him and he just okay, go on then. And then he started saying, oh, I've had a falling out with the manager. And Ferguson's like, well, no, you haven't. And he went, I haven't, have I? No ambition.
And then Ferguson said he's got an ankle injury, which he has. And he was like, no, I haven't.
This is why it doesn't really sort that out.
One of the things I was going to say about
then Paul Scholes gave him an ankle injury. Yeah. just to clear up any sort of
under orders from Alex Ferguson.
Yeah.
I can't be wrong.
He wouldn't even have just put Scholes up to it. He would have just said, Paul, Mark Rooney.
Yeah, that's right.
But one of the things that was interesting about the Paul Stretford thing, he's obviously been having a word in Rooney's shell, in my opinion, was that a few ex-pros actually came out and said, oh, Stretford was my agent for a while, and he was all very nice to me, and it was great when I was making him money, but after that he was like, I was like persona non grata, he blanked me, didn't answer my calls or anything. Andy Cole said that. Stan Collymore, alright, we'll write that one off. But Andy Cole said it, and a couple of other players said it as well. So
it's like my old agent.
I'd genuinely be interested to know what
Rooney would like to say, and if he could email in.
Yeah, email in Rooney, yeah. No, but I'll be interested to know what role Paul Stretford played in it.
Yeah.
The other thing I was going to say is there's a Man United fan in my office, and he was broken by the whole thing. He was broken about Rooney leaving, obviously. And then, do you know all those fans, in quotes, stood outside Rooney's house?
Yeah.
And then there was a big picture of Rooney in a Nike ad, like a billboard, and someone had painted over it, spray painted over it in red paint, "Move to City and you're dead."
Yeah, oh, that's right.
And I showed him all this stuff, and he was like getting more and more broken. And then when I showed him that picture, the only thing he could say was, "Well, at least they got the grammar right."
Did you see that absolute anal beard of a man who had?
What are you sitting opposite you?
Yeah, the Rooney on the back of his City shirt.
No, worse than that. A guy got a tattoo saying Rooney City legend with a tattoo of Rooney in a City shirt celebrating a goal.
That's got to be a fake. Well, they pull that sort of person out all the time. The Kaká,
maybe.
The Champions League winners one. It's just always City fans.
Pete Sunderland tattoo.
Maybe someone's making a mint out of them. Newspapers just drawing these tattoos on really well and going, "Oh, look what this idiot's
done." It always seems to come out. And only to do with City. I saw the picture of the guy with the giving it the clap into to Eastland with the Rooney number 10 City shirt on.
Yeah. Well, it was like that time when you had the Football Weekly tattoo.
That's true, yeah, that was a mistake. Yeah.
Disgraceful scenes, yeah.
I've got it changed actually to Football Is Weekly.
Yeah.
So I like things like that. I remember it when I was quite a lot younger when
bad tattoos.
When Newcastle had a lot of money. Not bad tattoos.
Oh, right.
I've got enough of them. Yeah. Somebody leaving a Roberto Baggio Newcastle shirt in the back of a car in St. James's Park car park.
Really?
And there were so many rumours going around that he was coming to Newcastle. It was
I can remember.
Based on that, as if when you're signing a player, you leave a shirt for them in a car
in the back of
and
the car.
Go, "Look, we've sorted this out.
We've got the shirt made up, so all we need to do is come."
When I was down in Portsmouth supporting Pompey when they signed Prozanecki, and the same day they signed a player called Mladan Redonja, this winger, terrible.
Oh, Redondo, did you think?
No, Redonja. And loads of people queuing up in the Pompey club shop to get their name on the back. Prozanecki, obviously.
Yeah.
And there's one bloke in there getting Redonja. I was thinking, you're going to regret that.
Well, maybe it was his brother. Yeah. I don't know.
It was him.
It could have been.
That's right. Talking of Manchester, James and I were there at Manchester City versus the Gunners.
Yeah. We had to sit at the home end.
We did.
You kept trying to out me.
Well, that was nothing to do with the football.
Your hair got done that.
Wit.
Oh, you sound all down there, Jim. The idea of sharing a pew with Marcus.
Yeah.
You know, it was great though, wasn't it? It's a really interesting stadium, Eastlands, because it's quite intimate despite being massive. They really work that well.
We were at the front of the second tier.
Yeah.
Oh, is there only two tiers? Oh, there's a very thin tier at the top. And but as you say, you felt like right in amongst it.
Yeah, it was good. But yeah, as I say, you did keep saying who's that fella back there? What, Johan Juro? Yeah. Tell me about his stats from when he was 17, things like that.
That's not quite.
Why would he know that?
I could hear them thinking.
Oh my god, he's one of them. Get your ass. Is that you're from Yorkshire?
It's all the same. Actually, a friend of mine's from York and he supports Man United, but also York, and he got a York City top for his birthday, which was in June, and he's only just got it because they didn't have a medium shirt for 3 months. Kids and fat men are obviously pure target market there.
It was brilliant. We thoroughly enjoyed ourselves.
We did, yeah. It was game as well.
It was a shame. I mean, obviously there was rumours of some horrible chanting from the Arsenal.
Yeah, well, I heard it.
Well, horrible chanting.
Yeah. It was awful.
That was absolutely hideous. But it was a shame because the Arsenal away support, as you said before, James, were pretty good, very vocal, enjoying themselves.
They're in real contrast to the home support. It's very odd.
I mean, you will find in general, as you guys know, the away support is an awful lot better. I mean, it was from a neutral's point of view, which I very much am. It was annoying to see a player sent off so early.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I said that it was a definite sending off, and the penalty was a definite.
Well,
penalty
the interesting thing was more so with the sending off. The general consensus seemed to be that the ref had got it all wrong and he'd ruined the game and stuff. And it was honestly, it was.
Well, could you not have a good, view of it? Then
every
everyone could see it.
And then every foul committed by an Arsenal player, they were going mental if they didn't.
Yeah, but that's standard home fare, though, isn't it?
Yeah, of course, but it was particularly bad. I thought.
Yeah, well, I think it's because. Sending off so early is going to, and if you're aggrieved by it, it's going to rile you.
But I think Man City, to their credit, I think they treated it quite well.
Still played well, yeah.
I think Arsenal did their tippy tappy. They try to pass it in the net as they are accused of doing every single week. But I think particularly, I think they were a bit they weren't very good in front of goal when they could have been a little.
Well, there was a couple of points where just. you know, there were shooting opportunities where they just didn't even seem to realise you could shoot in that situation. Yeah. It's just like, well, who do I pass to? Who do I pass? Oh, what?
And then it took Wayne Bridge to go, for crying out loud, there you go.
I think they just need to show them, like, the best, like, goals in the Premiership or something. Well, like, people whacking it from 30 yards.
Well, I was saying to Marcus, if you look at Frank Lampard's entire career, that is testament to just having a shot every now and then. Yeah. And there was so often Arsenal would find themselves in positions where they could do that, but they try and thread a ball through.
It's because they don't have these sort of, they don't have, like, I don't know, Ian Wright or something, or Smith or something, you know, these players that would just take a swing at it, you know what I mean? It's just, it's just not part of their game anymore.
By all means, you can still obviously sort of play that kind of intricate football, but I just think, just whack it occasionally.
Yeah. I think it's important to mix it up.
I think effectively what Arsenal need to, and a simple solution would be for Arsene Wenger to come out into the technical area, and when they've got the ball near to goal, just shout bang, 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 bang.
Or chances,
or just write shoot on a bit of paper and show the players at half time.
We ridicule Paul Ince for that.
You touched on it like briefly, but I think
I do beg your pardon.
No, not that. Man City are missing Kolarov. They need a decent left back back, because Bridge is a bit of a liability. Yeah. Really.
Well, Barry was playing there. Was he? Points, yeah.
I liked.
I've got 100,000 reasons to say Bridge isn't a liability.
Well, he is.
Before Adebayo came on, I thought they don't need him. Did you see him midweek? I mean, he only scored 3 goals, but he could have had about 7.
He
had an awful touch.
Balotelli came on as well. I was particularly excited about that. Right. Like, Balotelli had Adebayo on the pitch in front of us.
They genuinely don't need Adebayo.
No, not in the slightest.
The thing with Adebayor is he feels loved and he's motivated by that, he's a fantastic player.
When he opens up his legs, he's magnificent.
But he wants to play every game, doesn't he?
Well, that's the thing. He's a sort of player that needs to do that thing. So I think he's got
If they don't need Adebayor, then what on earth is Rocky Santa Cruz going to do?
Oh, yeah, well, Santa Cruz is another one, isn't he? I mean, he's not regularly played.
He's there for the calendar. He's there for the calendar. Right, well, we weren't the only people at a game on the weekend, weren't we?
No, because that would be mental.
No. in this room, you nobber.
That's 2 swears from you, Marcus Speller. Yeah,
and there's about to be 3 if you don't tell us what happened at the New Girls of West Ham United game.
Well, I think you probably saw at the time, Marcus. 2-1.
United v United.
It was a fun
everybody
old match.
Was United.
I don't see Newcastle as often as I should do.
That's because they're away up there.
Because they're 4 hours away. But
4.5.
Tiote had one of the best games of football I think I've seen a Premiership player. He was wonderful.
Big tout.
He was brilliant.
Pete has just reverted back to type, hasn't he?
He was brilliant.
Do you remember when he said that a goal Drogba scored like 2 seasons ago was the best goal ever seen?
Yeah.
The greatest goal ever scored or something. And then he changed that to the best goal of the last 10 years.
I have a terrible memory, as you well know.
Then he obviously thought like another one that was much better. Like Zidane in the Champions League final. And he went to 5 years.
Well, maybe the second one. It was definitely top 3.
It was brilliant.
Best goal of the game.
He had he had a space to operate that was about as big as this surprisingly echoey room. But he was just brilliant. He was taking the
ball.
Who was
this? Sorry, I've forgotten.
Tiote.
Okay.
Yeah.
He was wonderful.
Well, West Ham are an absolute shambles.
You were saying, Pete, that the support was very poor, the home support.
They are broken. They are smashed up. They are just sad.
Yeah, you did them, did you? You got them after the game, did you, Pete?
On the green street, yeah.
A friend of mine who
smashed
supports
through
West Ham.
A sari shop window.
A friend of mine who supports West Ham was saying exactly this about the atmosphere. He was questioning the point of why they want to move to Stratford, to the Olympic Stadium. And it just seems crazy to think that their support has become so dulled and quiet, because they're notoriously vocal.
Well, every 5 minutes they were talking about being about moving to this bloody stadium. Like, there was a man on the pitch and he was doing like pieces of camera and stuff, and he was saying, go to the website, go to the West Ham website, and you can see 7 reasons why we should be in the Olympic Stadium. And then on the field, this team,
one
this
great
toothless,
reason why not.
This toothless team can't even like do over. I don't know.
Carlton Cole looked really frustrated. He looked like he didn't want to be there.
Are you saying they couldn't sell out a 60,000 seater?
Well, I think it was pretty much a sellout. I couldn't see that many patches, but it was just.
Apparently, the talk from West Ham has been that they would drop ticket prices dramatically.
I was going to say they could do. They really could
move there.
Speaking of brave people sitting in the away end, of grounds, you two. Mm. I'm going to ratchet it up a notch.
Yeah. Oh, I thought I'd managed to gloss over this.
No, I went to see Millwall Portsmouth last week, and I sat in the Millwall end.
Oh, wow. Oh.
And they're all very nice to me.
Yeah.
I didn't get any hassle at all.
Did wonder about the scars on your face.
They were there before. And Ramble listener, actually, Charlie Mahoney, looked after me, and him and his brothers and his old man. I made a nice night out. Portsmouth won, obviously, which is great. Awful game. Probably the worst football game I've seen since I last saw Portsmouth, actually.
Well, yeah. Right.
So, but no, it's all right. It's pretty good.
Got me happy that Portsmouth still exists.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, let's get...
Can I just quickly say hello to Tom Wood, who Ramble Foss holed me from a few lines
back. Oh, at the game?
Yeah. No, you can't. Tom.
No.
Yeah, Pompey obviously won it in Hull, and they've been saved, haven't they? They're not going to be wound up.
For now, I don't think it's quite over.
No, it's fine to spend.
Yeah. Go for it.
What I want to see now is them actually spend some money. Get back up into the Premier League and spend more money.
Maybe a good cup run as well.
Yeah. I'll tell you who we need back at that club.
Yeah, go on, say it.
Harry Redknapp.
Oh, I thought you were going to go for story.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
No, it's, but I mean, when I heard all this press release being put out on Friday, I was out with the missus, out with Mrs. Lukey, and I was devoed. I was completely devastated.
I was gutted. I literally rang you in tears.
Loads of people tweeted me saying, "I'm sorry to hear about that, mate." All this stuff, and I was like, what's happening? I had to check on Sky Sports News on the phone.
Is Pete okay?
Yeah. How do these people know about a horrible bereavement? I've never met them. But luckily it's all been sorted out. It was a bit of brinkmanship, I think, really. So.
Yeah, well, Andronico said that it was the... Who was it? He said someone's really, really rashly put the statement out without his blessing.
Right.
And he was trying to distance himself from it. I think they were just frustrated at Gaidamack's.
The problem is that Andronicou and Gaidamack have both got a very patchy past about telling the truth.
Yeah.
So it's impossible to know who's saying yes and who's saying no and who's telling the truth, basically. So it's hard to read anything into it.
There's me thinking they were fit and proper people.
Yeah.
Also in the Championship, Preston 4, Palace 3. John Parkin got a couple.
The beast. Palace, there was some goals scored in that game. My word.
Absolutely. Palace now in the relegation zone with Middlesbrough and Bristol City, who got a good point at home to QPR. Well, I say a good point. They were up. Mm. I think QPR equalised.
But QPR haven't lost the game yet.
So. No. I think it's got
to
be.
Outside a pub in Manchester that we went to after the game, there was a sign that said, "No Parkin." There wasn't a G on it. So I don't know whether it was to add the Manchester accent to the word or whether John Parkin had just been getting so hammered in the area that he'd been banned with a painted
He'd take a disabled bail.
a painted sign, not even like a temporary one. You'll always be banned.
Wall,
you will always be banned.
That's his 100th and 101st goal, apparently.
Is that right?
Yeah. Mm. League goal.
I'm a big fan of Johnny Parkin.
So Pete with a knowledge bomb there, ladies and gentlemen.
Exploded right in my face, that did.
We'll have a sex bomb next.
That'll do. There was another 4-3. Carlisle.
In
League One, Carlisle 3, Charlton 4.
It's a good win for Charlton away from home.
Charlton were 3-0 up, and then and Carlisle got it to 3-0, and then Charlton won it in the 92nd
minute. You've blown it.
You don't want it every week.
Yes. Yeah. Big scores are back.
There was another great comeback.
And that's a fact.
Another great comeback in League One. Bristol Rovers were away at Hartlepool and scored two goals in the last 5 minutes, Pete.
Pete didn't see that. No point asking Pete. He's Newcastle now. He don't give a shit about Hartlepool.
He hasn't hung a monkey in ages.
Hang on a minute. Yeah. We're going to get some words of wisdom from Pete.
Didn't I read that that both Hartley and Poole were on the pitch at the end of the match?
Well, is that true?
That's true.
Brilliant.
We'll put it in the maybe box for wisdom.
Surely they should come together to make some sort of Power Ranger.
Yeah, that's the best thing to happen since there was that game of the week when Moore and Donaldson scored for the same game. Yeah. Yeah? Has that ever happened to Speller and Campbell? Don't think so.
Probably has in the history of football, I would wager.
No. There's only one. There's only one.
Definitely has.
In League Two, Chesterfield 4, Shrewsbury 3. Three goals from Shrewsbury in the last 10 minutes after being 4-0 down. They did a Spurs.
Peter was just getting tired at the end, it seems.
Yeah. Another 4-3. Rotherham 3, Wickham 4.
Am I right in saying, if I just get this right, there was 600,000 goals in the football.
Did you see my favourite one, Forrest McGugan?
Oh, he's...
His free kick was one of the best. I'm going to stick my neck out here. My substantial
neck. It was
the greatest free kick ever scored. Top left, spinning out. Oh, He's banging it, old suits you, sir.
Rivellino in the corner's gutted.
on a real more serious note, Lewis McGugan, I hope he can fulfil his potential, because he looked amazing at one point. He really went off the ball, and now he's sort of banging him in again.
Yeah.
I hope he can really pick up that form.
I just think he needs to put on weight. He's too lightweight for me.
Come see me and Big John Parkin.
Take that for dinner.
It's SPL time.
Yes.
Ooh. The big one. Rangers beat Celtic at Celtic Park 3-1.
The big one. It's Caden Beath.
I'm thinking Claire, the blue Brazil playing before. I tell you what, lots of tasty challenges.
Yeah, there would have been.
The Old Firm Derby is full of them. You've got to love a tasty challenge, the Old Firm Derby.
Didn't Samaras knee
hit him
in the head? Like, that's really right. Badly, but like really badly.
Well, no, it wasn't like...
No, but like, as in not very good. Like,
oh, if
you were trying to really hurt him in the back of the head, it was literally just a little.
We were looking at it from different.
I'm not really a fan of it, because the ones I saw in that game were actually quite horrific, and I think if we pipe up a bit about people like De Jong and stuff like that, I don't think we should be really giving it the big licks.
I'm merely saying, Luke. I'm not saying, hey, brilliant, there was a lot of challenges. I was just saying there was a lot of challenges, and there is always a lot of tasty challenges in these games.
I don't want to pick any one out, because I know I'm going to get a stick from the other side if I do, but Anthony Stokes' one was particularly poor. And McCulloch's one, actually, there you go.
McCulloch one was one of those challenges. It was one of those challenges where he did get the ball and followed through, so to speak, very much. And he was kind of like, oh, I've got the ball, you know. It's like, it's not enough anymore.
There's a man's leg hanging off your stud.
Yeah.
Before we say that, we've got to mention the controversial penalty given to Rangers.
Never a penalty.
After Broadfoot. Was it even a dive? He just sort of
hopped out the way, really.
Yeah, and sort of went, all right then. Tucked away by Kenny Miller quite beautifully.
A Circa fan told me it definitely was a dive, so.
I didn't think it was a penalty personally, but that's a huge win for Rangers.
I've got an email about big derbies, actually.
Have you?
I'm gonna say an underrated derby here, given that I don't think anyone's ever heard of it before, apart from this guy Adam, who's emailed in. Hopefully, you will know about it after this. The Rambleforce Hall. On listening to the latest edition of your fabulous podcast, I couldn't help noticing you described the Montevideo Derby as the best derby in the world. Surely you have overlooked the annual game between Jersey and Guernsey, more commonly known as the Marathi. Do you know that? Jersey-Guernsey?
Yeah.
As if having a football competition named after a brand of fags wasn't enough, the annual game also exhibits some of the most aggressive examples of inter-insular racism you're ever likely to encounter. For instance, at this year's bout in Jersey, hundreds of supporters ran onto the field after Guernsey won 1-0.
That's the population, basically, isn't it?
Yeah. To have what can only be described as a playground scuffle with a police officer. reporting that groups were separated and Guernsey's core fans were escorted to the harbour to go home, presumably.
Just chucked in.
Were they deported?
The policeman said a small number of Jersey men did not go to watch football and had other ideas on their minds. One Guernsey supporter who was escorted to the harbour commented, "It wasn't very nice though, especially to have traffic cones thrown at us." Presumably that's not by the policeman.
Well, he's got to defend himself somehow. He's one against 100.
I want to know is, why have they got traffic cones? You can only drive 30-40 miles an hour in Jersey. Yeah. That's the only place I've been to five times.
Unless you're Mick Hucknall.
It's not the only place you've been to five times.
To travel
exactly five times.
Exactly five times.
I've never been to Jersey.
Anyway, can I finish this?
Yeah.
In the past, games have been halted for such reasons as Jersey men showering the Guernsey team with carrots, because Guernsey dwellers are referred to as donkeys, and also such players as Graham Lasso and Matt Letitier, actually they're the only two good players, graduate from this baptism of fire, presumably tearing the opposition new bottom holes in the process. So in conclusion, if you want namby-pamby skills and talent, go and watch Arsenal. We, however, will continue to compensate for the lack of any decent live football with a yearly melee resulting in extensive grazing and moderately hurt feelings, and you're all welcome to join me next year in May. Keep up the good rambling, Adam.
Thanks, Adam. That was a great evening.
Let's go to Jersey for my sixth visit.
I'd be up for it. I've been to Guernsey. I've not been to Jersey.
What was Guernsey like?
It's nice, yeah.
I've got friends from Jersey.
Oh,
they'll almost undoubtedly know that Adam bloke, because as I say, there's hardly anyone there.
Yeah.
40 miles wide.
There you go.
There we are.
Another knowledge bomb.
That's the Jersey.
More
round
a knowledge
up.
sort of
spurt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fisher.
More of a knowledge cap.
A knowledge banger.
Yeah.
Right, let's come up to speed with what's been going on in the top football league in Spain, which I like to call Primera Liga.
Means first league.
More Premier League,
actually. Yeah. Primera is Spanish for first. Primera, Segunda.
Yeah, first, second. Very true, yeah.
Mm. Real Madrid 6.
A knowledge firework for you.
Racing, Racing Santander 1, Ronaldo with 4. A knowledge cartwheel.
Do you mean Catherine wheel?
No, I never. Well, I was celebrating, as I said it. Did you not see me? 4, Hull.
It was an actual first Hull of the season?
Hull!
I imagine they said.
Is it the first Hull that we've talked about this season? I'm sure it is.
Is it?
Possibly.
Mm. Well, if we're wrong, I'm sure somebody will tell us.
But it was a good Hull, wasn't it?
It was. He's got loads of goals already. He's got like 9 goals already this season.
Ridiculous.
Doing all right.
Ridiculous. Now, have you heard at Real that Jorge Valdano has confirmed that Zinedine Zidane, he's got a new role at Real Madrid? I forgot that he even had a role.
He was there as an ambassador, wasn't he?
Yeah, kind of.
Does
that
just mean they still pay him?
Pretty much. They just want him in and around the club.
Yeah.
I don't think he needs the money.
No, I wouldn't have thought so.
It'd be nice, wouldn't it?
He just goes around dishing out headbutts.
Not after that advert he did with Pele and Maradona.
Oh, under his job description, it just says headbutts and volleys.
Very good. This was apparently after Zidane himself requested to work closely with Jose Mourinho. It's a funny one, isn't it? He basically can do what he wants.
Do you think that'll work for us?
Well, let's try.
Just send a request.
Yeah,
it's like they've spent all the money on the pitch, and it's like, well, we can't buy another player.
Yeah.
We can have another coach, can't we?
Zidane probably still could play.
Yeah. Valdano has said that we are setting up what will be the Zidane position. So they've sort of created.
I want the Zidane position in this podcast.
Yeah.
Sorry, it means having a headbutt you all. I'll do.
Sorry,
it.
Pal, it's taken.
That's it.
Yeah, so that's what's going on at Real Empire. Meanwhile, further down the well, I say further down. Villarreal only just further down because they're second. Beat Atletico Madrid 2-0.
Giuseppe Rossi scored a great goal. A great goal.
You're a big fan of him.
Oh, I love him. He's brilliant. I think he's so underrated.
Best goal you've ever seen.
It was definitely the best goal I've ever seen.
By Rossi.
No, it was excellent.
And that's
honestly
their best start to the season, I think. Villarreal are enjoying there.
Not too bad, is it?
Yeah.
Since the days of Raquel, man, all that sort of stuff.
I think so.
Oh, right.
Well, yeah, no, because they were very much up and coming in those
at that point,
weren't they?
Yeah.
They seemingly a little bit more.
They nearly got the final of the Champions League. Though.
Imagine if they won the league. I know it's very unlikely.
Got to the final of the Champions League.
Semi-final.
Well, I'm saying, imagine if they did get to the final.
They're only one kick or so away from that in the final, yeah.
That's right. Well, that would have been to equalise, I think. But yeah, I
totally know. Oh, yeah, of course it was, yeah.
What is that? Another 4-3? Sevilla 4, Athletic Bilbao 3.
The most goals ever in this ramble. Yeah. I'm sticking my neck out.
Luis Fabiano with 2. Fabiano's always sort of angling for a move, and then, oh no, I'm staying. And he's shocking for that.
Yeah, he is.
Just stay there. You're having a good time. You loved
it. Prick tease, isn't it?
It's like Henri. He's the biggest prick tease since Henri. Henri used to that all the time, didn't he?
Yeah.
Tell me I'm wanted. Tell me I'm loved.
Yeah. And then Adebayor failed at doing so. Or he got his answer quickly. Yeah. Barcelona won 2-0 in Zaragoza.
Messi got a couple.
Messi with 2. And then Los Che. Valencia lost 2-1 at home against Real Mallorca. It's a shame.
Can I give you a little Barcelona fact? Factoid?
Go on, old sport.
I think I'm right in saying, and I think I got this from Opta Joe, they haven't fielded the same team twice yet this season, Barcelona.
Barcelona?
No.
Can I give you a Ronaldo fact?
Go on.
Is it true?
8-3. League
Blimey.
Matches.
Wow. Blimey.
Bennett.
And he scored 10 goals, and Real Madrid have only scored 20 goals this season.
Cool. I can give you a Real Madrid fact. Real Madrid play their football at the Santiago Bernabeu.
Is that in Madrid?
Yep.
Amazing.
Brilliant. Well, let's look that up before we confirm it as a fact. let's move on to Serie A. Now, you remember last week Inter, when they won in Cagliari, there were racist chants aimed at Samuel Eto'o.
There were.
Well, the Cagliari president, Massimo Cellini, he supported his fans after this little episode. Because, let me finish. He said he accused the referee of misunderstanding the reaction of the fans. I don't know what they were reacting to, a black man being on the field. Perhaps.
No,
it seems absolutely ridiculous.
No, there was an actual monkey that they were trying to draw attention to.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if you actually saw a monkey on a pitch, you would not chant at it. You'd be like, fucking hell, look at that! Yeah.
The other thing is, that whenever I hear of this, I always think of that guy when the Allied forces invaded Iraq. And you'd go, no, everything's fine in the background.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, Kevin McAlally.
Yeah, yeah. No, Kevin McAlally was someone else, wasn't it? This guy was like, he was called Ali.
Comicalally.
Comicalally, that's it. Yeah,
oh,
yeah, yeah.
Sorry, yeah. Well, anyway, he said that the Cagliari fans are amongst the best in Italy, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, then they're not that type of fan.
Well, they
probably.
Are.
He said it was certainly an error of judgment. Racist incidents do not happen here in Cagliari. I can exclude that categorically. Our fans are not like that.
We saw it happen.
No, but is this basically some mafia-style thing? Just going, you didn't see nothing.
Yeah.
Well, people did, because they were fined 22 grand the next day.
Each?
Hopefully.
Hopefully it's each. I suspect it isn't.
No, it's not. But they have been fined, so he's a big fat liar.
Yeah.
Allegedly. No, not allegedly. He is.
No, he's
But no, it's quite sadly, though, I was reading up on this. Apparently, Eto no longer brings his family to watch him play because of all this crap.
That is horrifying.
2010.
Yeah.
Sickening. Absolutely sickening.
But you'll be pleased to know that a much more liberal-minded team, Lazio, beat them 2-1. And so they had to, Matt, Lazio versus Cagliari, what an awful game. We were that one though, were you, Luke?
No, I wasn't.
Lazio go top because Inter drop points at home to Sampdoria.
Eto did score, didn't
after, but he did score indeed. And then also while we're on the Serie A scores, Fiorentina 1-2-1 at home. They're off the bottom only by 1 point, but that's Parma good. Are bottom now.
God,
another big side down there.
All these great five. Sad. I've got a little email about Serie A.
Have you?
Hey, Marcus and fellow Ramblers. Rude.
I reckon this would be an opportune time to read it, because we've just done the Serie A roundup. So,
yeah, that is essentially what I was doing.
Hang on, has he actually started that email like that?
Yes.
Say it again.
Hey, Marcus and fellow Ramblers.
We're not reading it.
It amazed me that
it's my mouth.
Well, make him read it. Have a bit of respect for yourself, Jim.
It amazed me that it took you more than 4 seconds to realise that's how it started.
Well, I won't be listening and I won't be responding.
He was thinking about himself, it's fine.
Nothing will I.
Go on, James.
To add to the story about Zlatan's builder's son, Zlatan isn't the first player to introduce a friend at Milan. In a Dutch TV show, I heard about the following story. Around 2004, Clarence Seedorf introduced a friend to AC Milan and asked Carlo Ancelotti if he could train with the team. Harvey Assayas, I think that's how that's pronounced, don't know, not apologising if it's wrong, Harvey, was a Dutch Suriname footballer who played in Ajax in the Ajax Youth Academy. After turning professional, he had a brief stint at Feyenoord, but subsequently didn't impress and moved to various clubs, slowly moving down the leagues. After 6 years of playing, he ended up in the Spanish third division and retired from football, taking odd jobs around Europe. He travelled to Milan at one point and met up with his friend Seedorf. Milan at the time were having a defensive crisis, and after Seedorf asked, Ancelotti allowed Assayas to train with the team. Within a few months, Assayas lost 20 kilograms and was in good shape again, and was offered a contract at Milan.
That's a lot of weight.
Yeah, the highlight of his comeback came when he was allowed to come on in the last minutes of a cup game versus Palermo, who made a beautiful run in the last minute and turned in a stunning cross, but unsurprisingly Jonzel Thomason missed the chance to score.
Aww.
He wouldn't go on to play any more minutes for Milan, though he was part of the 2005 Champions League final losing squad, but became the topic of some documentaries in Holland, and he's now occasionally a football analyst on the telly. Who knows, we might see a Swedish builder sitting on the bench at Milan soon. That's Paul from Amsterdam, the Netherlands. What an absolute chancer.
That is super. Thanks for that,
no,
Paul.
It's not.
Well, Paul, you've not
this
addressed
is just
me
absolutely
properly.
No, no,
no. He's not addressed us properly, and he's pulled it back by
stop being jealous
by mentioning Zlatan, but I hope he's learnt his lessons.
Stop being a knobhead.
That should have been in the Zlatan Zeppelin.
Here we go.
No.
That really is. That's brilliant.
What's
I think.
That in the sky there? And Zeppelin.
You could have put that in afterwards if you really wanted to.
You wouldn't have known.
Saved himself a job, isn't it?
Giving us a hideous surprise.
It's such a shame that Jondel Thomason missed that chance, because he could have played 1 minute for Milan and had an assist.
Yes.
What I like about
has
that
he got a Champions League runners up medal then?
If he's in the squad, he would. Oh, you have to play a certain
game. I don't know. Is that the case in the Champions League?
Well, maybe it isn't.
What I like about that is that that's probably Ali Dyer sort of thinking, this is as good as it possibly could go.
It is. I like those sort of stories. I want to hear more of those, of like charlatan footballers. There was one in, Italian guy in Britain.
Yeah, that's
who travelled
right.
Around the league clubs, wasn't they? Yeah, that's it, in Wales, yeah. And he used to, but it was a bit more sad. He used to dupe people, say he was like an academy player, take all their money or whatever, or their sort of board. And then when he got found out, he'd just move on.
Yeah. It's incredible. Imagine the balls you'd have to
have to do that?
Football.
He must have been, indeed, he must have been claiming he was his own agent and stuff like that. Yeah.
My goodness. Incidentally, while we're just still in the Italian chat, Brazil manager Mano Menezes said that Ronaldinho may well play a part in a future call-up.
You almost said Ronaldo there, and I almost got very excited.
Yeah, sorry about that. I apologise.
Push it back down, Luke.
When he was asked about this, he said that I think I will call Ronaldinho.
Yeah, but he just said call. We might just call him, don't we?
Also, he's keeping a close eye on Hernandez of Lazio, so he clearly listens to the ramble. I think you all know where we're going to go now. To the Dutch league.
Yeah.
We talk, there are big scores, and there are big scores. This is one of those big scores. PSV Eindhoven.
You need three numbers for this score.
Yeah, you do.
PSV Eindhoven 10. Brackets T-E-N.
Yeah, that, if on the Vinnie printer. Yeah. Older listeners, that would have been written as 10. And then probably a bit of a, no, really, 10. Yeah. Then another bracket.
Feyenoord 0. Yeah. Feyenoord had a man sent off on 34 minutes. They were only a goal down at the time, though.
Yeah. I spoke to Andy Brassel, and he maintains, he watched this game, and he maintains that Feyenoord at the better side, so they went a goal down. Well, it's the sort of score that if it comes up on the telly and you're at home, members of your family who don't even like football go, bloody hell.
Yeah. they conceded 8 in the second half. 8 goals.
Have any of you seen the goals? They were quite something. There were some absolute screamers in there.
If you include injury time, James, in the second half, that's it. That's conceding a goal every 6 minutes.
Well done.
That's mad.
It's incredible. Like, it seems to be one of those games where just everything went in. The highlights I saw of it had like an almost sort of kind of obligatory save just to go, yeah, we'll give him something. Just unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Great stuff.
But, I mean, that's not some like rubbish.
Yeah, that's it.
Kind of like strugglers. That's a huge club.
Feyenoord have had, well, Ruud Gullit play for Feyenoord. Mm. Jan Cruyff played for Feyenoord towards the end of his career. Yeah, loads of players play for Feyenoord. They're a decent.
Royston Drenthe.
Yeah, he's there, I believe. One of the things I found out about Feyenoord when I looked at this is that one of their actual official nickname, right, is the Sleeping Giants. Don't give yourself that nickname.
No.
That's a defeatist nickname.
But how long have they had it? Maybe it probably started off being quite arrogant and then became prophetic and everyone's going, yeah.
The dead Giants now. Yeah. You know.
Dead sleeping
I'm going to stick my neck out and say that is the highest top flight score, single score I can ever remember.
Yeah, same. I don't remember a game in any top Liverpool flight games with double figures.
No, side. I don't. I remember
9-1.
United Ipswich.
And Spurs Wigan as well last season.
Yes, absolutely right, yeah. But 10s, I don't remember anything.
But I think that is one of the most incredible results in recent European football in history.
Yeah.
Because as you say, that is a big game. Mm. That's a huge game in Holland. 10-0. 10-0.
Imagine, Jim, right? Imagine going to Arsenal, watching them and losing to Spurs 10-0.
I know. I daren't.
He can't think about it. He's just sitting there laughing like a moron because he won't think of it. He just won't think about it.
That's 3-0 would be.
That's being 4-0 down at FIFA, right? I'm bringing my keeper out then.
Yeah.
Keeper's going to try and score a goal.
Just get players sent off.
Yeah. You know? Do you think like the Penarol fans or whoever, which Penarol Nacional fans, they'll sing about this?
Oh, yeah.
In 100 years, they'll sing about the 10-0.
By the way, I think that if Tottenham beat Arsenal 10-0, there'd definitely be a DVD.
Oh yeah, that'll be a three-part series.
Yeah,
there'd be a dramatisation on ITV. Yeah,
I'm
sure.
with the music done by Mogwai.
Right, let's move down the Americas to Peru. Many of you may have seen this little story, but
I've actually seen it. It's amazing.
It's one way to describe it, certainly. And this is in the Peruvian second division, Hijos de Ascovinchos.
Good.
Ascovinchos.
You spent a lot of time in South America. I expect those pronunciations to be spot on.
And I think you found it was.
I couldn't possibly tell.
They had 4 players hospitalised during their promotion deciding
that's
clash.
Funny, James. No, that wasn't a laugh. That was a.
That was incredulous.
It was, yeah. It was incredulity.
I'm going to.
That
continue.
Was an incredulatory.
Continuing,
be quiet. With local Marx's loquaciousness,
with good word, with local rivals, they were playing against Sport and Cash.
Sport and Cash.
Sport and Cash.
Oh, hello. We are Sport and Cash,
like Tango and Cash.
Yeah, very good.
Like Pat Cash. No, move on.
Apart some of the Hijos players. were handed supposedly there were energy drinks.
Alarm bells. Alarm bells.
Spiked with tranquilizers, perhaps. And four of their players collapsed.
It's not funny.
No.
Are they all right
now? And you saw it, did you?
I've seen the clip of it on YouTube, yeah.
They just sort of doubled over, aren't they, most of the time?
One of them celebrated.
Was it ketamine or something?
Well, something like that. Certainly some sort of tranquilizer, yeah.
Well, no, they didn't. They lost 3-0.
Oh, it wasn't celebrating. They were definitely still playing when it happened, though.
Yeah.
But despite this fact, the Ancash president, Pepe Malki, said that, oh no, it was a dodgy pre-match meal they had. Nothing to do with this. Even though
spices made them hallucinate.
Even traces of tranquilizer were found in their blood. But he said they ate barbecued chicken with spices and ended up taking indigestion tablets afterwards. I'm sure these four men fainted because of that and the physical effort that they put
in. But this guy's the president of the other team.
Yes, of course.
So how does he know what meal they had?
Well, wow, again,
thou dost protest too much.
Because we tried to push tablets into the chicken, but we couldn't manage to get it. We knew exactly
Nando's
what they were.
Wouldn't let us.
He also went on to say, I even went as far as a suppository. But it wouldn't stay in.
Yeah. I tried to inject it myself, but it looked a bit too obvious. Yeah. Right, well, here's another one from the crazy world of...
Did that happen to finals as well?
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe
can't rule it out.
No. Jose Luis Chilavert.
Good man.
He's been absent from this show far too long.
Dwarf entrant.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Now, we talk about agents being what's-its in Europe, don't we? Especially Rooney's one, we mentioned before. Well, Chilavert, he beat up an Argentinian agent in an airport following a dispute over commission.
I'm instantly unsympathetic.
Well, towards the agent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's agent.
Yeah. Sorry?
Agent.
Yeah.
His own agent,
yeah.
Or...
A secret agent. No, it was. Well, what it was the agent Pablo Cejas said that the argument started when he met Chilavert at the airport in Buenos Aires. And apparently, they flew to Paraguay, and they were still arguing when they got out of the airport in Paraguay. And the agent said, Chilavert demanded money from me for his supposed part in the transfers of a couple of Argentinian players to Mexico and one to Greece. And he said, but I told him I had nothing to do with those moves. And then Chilavert responded, he called me a starving Paraguayan and I cannot allow that. It bothers me that in a foreign land they say whatever, but in our country I am not going to allow it. So he done him over.
Crazy.
Yeah.
If there's one man who's not starving.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Pele, because he just had his 70th birthday.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of cake.
Yeah, so Pele.
Lots of hugs and kisses from the Ramble to Pele.
Yes. Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, I saw.
Happy birthday to
Pele.
They did that on Match of the Day too, didn't they?
They did.
Played a bit of Stevie Wonder, yeah.
I saw some old goals from Pele in these Santos days, because obviously the only footage you really see of Pele is in the 58 World Cup or the 70 World Cup.
Yeah. Or him missing in the 70 World Cup.
Yeah.
And that dummy he did as well.
Yeah. Honestly, the goals he scored at Santos was just ridiculous.
Yes.
And I tell you what, a player so effective with left and right, you'll never find him.
I'm not having a go, and it is his birthday, so I'll keep this brief.
Yeah.
He didn't score those goals. That's including like reserve games and
he scored the ones I saw.
Oh yeah, okay. He scored those. Yeah, he scored those. They definitely count. They're safe.
The footage was grainy.
You can't take that away from me. Definitely scored those.
Hang on a minute, ladies and gentlemen, it's profile time.
Wow.
Hello. That was quick.
Hello indeed. I hope you're all sitting comfortably. We've got a man who died recently.
We haven't got a man who died recently. I want to make that clear.
It's not Weekend at Bernie's.
The man's just died. It's Manchester City legend Malcolm Allison.
Malcolm Big Mal Allison.
Big Mal Allison.
What a personality.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Everyone had an opinion on the big man.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to start with Brian Clough's opinion.
Yeah.
Brian Clough called him the Errol Flynn of football, who was too handsome for his own good. Don Revy, of course.
Can you relate to that, Marcus? Can you?
Ask James. Don Revy, on the other side of the fence, dismissed him as an embarrassment to the game.
Team Clough. Team Clough.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, that goes without saying.
Yeah.
I've never met anyone who's Team Revy. Mind you, I've never been to Leeds before.
No.
In the Independent, in the article after he died, said that Allison was arguably the finest, deepest thinking and most innovative football coach England has known.
Gosh, big praise.
And, absolutely.
What year was he born, Marcus?
Oh, my goodness. I do apologise, Luke. I'm getting ahead
sickening.
Of myself. He was born on the 5th of September 1927.
Just under 40 years before the Summer of Love.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that, mate.
It's okay.
He had a short playing career. He started as Charlton Athletic as an amateur in 1944. He didn't break through to the first team there. He just wasn't happy with the way things were done. Basically,
players better than him?
Not enough mirrors.
Outdated coaching methods, he put it down to.
He was very forward thinking as a
very forward thinking.
You might come on to it in a minute, but I forget who now, but a player piped up recently and said, it's probably in an obituary or something, said that he was the first manager to treat players like athletes, basically.
We will come on to that, absolutely. I think it was Summerby who said that.
Yeah.
So he left for West Ham in 1951, and he became a regular in their side for the next 6 years, playing 255 times for the club, I think. And he loved coaching, and it was obvious from the start when he was a player. And he would attend summer courses held by the England manager, Walter Winterbottom, at the time. That's a sign of the times, a man, Walter Winterbottom.
Absolutely.
Walter Winterbottom was one of the first proper England managers, I think. Before that, I think the team was picked by like a committee.
That's right, yeah.
We should find a man with the most English sounding name in the country, just let him manage England.
It's an idea.
Bielsa.
We'll get Bielsa in.
Bielsa.
So Alisson was a big believer in the way that the Continentals played the game. That there was much more reliance on skill and not so the traditional British physical methods. So again, crying out loud nowadays, let alone the 50s.
We've learned that lesson, haven't we?
That's right. And whilst he was at West Ham, he was always questioning the leadership's methods and so on. And the manager, I think, was Ted Funton at the time. He let Alisson have an input into the training sessions.
Right.
You know, and he was, as I said, just a player there, you know. It became a very important influence in the dressing room, and acted as a mentor to a lot of the younger generation, most notably Bobby Moore. He tried to get people to play a more cultured type of football. And bearing in mind, he was just a player there. He wasn't the manager. That West Ham side, incidentally, won promotion to the First Division in 1958. Unfortunately, though, Alisson, he got tuberculosis. And at the age of 31, he had a lung removed, which, of course, ended his playing career. Now, he'd been quite a healthy young man up until then, but I think some reports say that he just couldn't understand why he got tuberculosis and why all this stuff happened to him. And basically, he had a bit of a lifestyle change after that. He went on the champagne. He went on the champers and the booze and all, and he became a professional gambler for the next 2 years, a car salesman, ran a nightclub in London. Just totally changed.
Wow.
And even against medical advice, as you could, and common sense, he went and turned out for a non-league side, Romford in Essex, James, with one lung.
I think that's probably the highlight of his career.
Yeah, I'd say so.
From where
yeah.
I'm sitting.
So anyway, he then thought, right, let's get into coaching here, because that was his passion. So he went to coach at Cambridge University and with non-league Sutton United as well around that time. And whilst he was at Cambridge, he tried to bring in some tactical innovation. For example, he banned the team from passing the ball back to the goalkeeper. He was just ridiculed for that. Why? That was, obviously the keeper, there was no back pass or anything then, so that was just a part and parcel of the game.
Yeah.
We can all remember when the game was like that. This was in, would have been early
60s. Was this just in his training methods or in the games as well?
Yeah, everything. He wouldn't allow them to pass the ball back to the keeper in the games. Try and play a more cultured style of football.
Yeah.
So he tried to re-establish himself in the game, and in 63 he became manager of Bath City, and then shortly after that, second division, Plymouth Argyle. So this is when he was getting going. He was sacked after a year due to differences with the board and a big disapproval with his lifestyle. He was a bit of a playboy. But a few months later, he went to Manchester City, and he worked alongside Joe Mercer there.
This is the glory years coming up.
And this was the glory
years. Strap in, chaps.
Now, Alisson, we have to say, as you said earlier, Luke, he was a huge personality.
Didn't he wear a Federer quite a
Federer, bit? Yeah, he did, yeah.
That was more when he was at Crystal Palace, I think. Mm. But yes, he did, very much so. I mean, if you Google images of the man, it's a treat. it really is. What a man he was. And
he's like a Google. If you typed in man about town, You'd get the same picture.
Indeed, indeed.
Man about town with one lung. Keep it okay. Come up.
Yeah. Joe Mercer was, of course, much older, more experienced, but he wasn't in best of health when he was at City. And basically, he needed a younger, sort of healthier guy to coach the team and kind of get stuck in more with the players on a closer level. And City was stuck in the second division and very much overshadowed by Matt Busby's Manchester United side. So they went about transforming Manchester City with immediate success. Let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, they got some new players, in they came, they won the second division, this next season they stayed up. The season after, they only pipped Manchester United to the league title in 67-68.
Scenes.
Absolutely. And that side featured a wonderful front trio of Francis Lee, Colin Bell and Mike Summerby. And they played such exciting free-flowing football.
Franny Lee is, look at his face.
Yeah.
Just look at his face.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And this time, Alisson was known as a real playboy around the city, drinking lots of champagne and smoking many a big fat cigar, yeah, even with the one lung.
Yeah.
And he started giving it the big one. He said that he predicted that his team would murder everyone on the planet and scare Europe to death. Unfortunately, though, when they got into the European Cup, they were knocked out in the first round by a Turkish side, which wasn't too good. But they did win the FA Cup in 69 and the League Cup and the Cup Winners' Cup in 1970.
Which made them...
Sorry?
Cup winners,
happy?
Cup winners.
Oh,
cup winners.
Oh, yeah, from last week.
They were happy, Pete. But, like, Manchester City... Happy. Manchester City were just lounging around second division. In came him, and him and Mercer. It was like Clough and Taylor, almost, really.
Because Alisson... I'm sorry, Mercer gave him assurances that he was like a bit of a Gordon Brown, Tony Blair thing.
Yeah.
Because Mercer said, I'll be moving on in a couple of years.
Yeah.
And then when it came to it, Mercer refused to move on.
Mm.
And I think there's a bit of a sort of contradiction there, and a bit of arguing going on behind the scenes.
But before that, though, Mercer and Alisson were,
of course, they're very successful, yeah.
And Mike Summerby said recently about Alisson whilst at City, he said, Joe Mercer was a figurehead, but Alisson was the key to the door. He brought the fitness levels to football that are still there now.
Yeah.
And this was in the 60s. You know, he was the forerunner of fitness and tactics. And he said...
Stephen Ireland would have loved that, wouldn't he?
Yeah. He would have done.
Pre-season.
Can I just not play and just do fitness all season?
But the players loved Alisson. Summerby also said, my wife always says that you love Malcolm Alisson more than you love me. And that's how you epitomise Malcolm Alisson. Just an absolutely incredible man.
Maybe the best ever Malcolm.
What about the one in the middle?
No,
not real.
No. Well, Mercer... now, obviously, Alisson, his social activities were quite something, Pete Donaldson, let me tell you. And Mercer tolerated him, all that sort of stuff, because Big Mal, he didn't let that affect his work, and he was still always first to the training ground and all. But there was one occasion...
Being sick.
There was one occasion where Mercer was in his car, speeding, and the police pulled him over. And he went out the window and went, all right, officer, what's Malcolm done now then?
Did he?
Yeah, yeah. But Alisson was the first celebrity footballer or guy involved in football to be a newspaper columnist as well.
Oh, okay.
Little things like this. Around that time, Juventus offered to give him the manager's job there, but he chose not to leave Mercer and what they'd built at the City. But then into the 70s, Mercer's health got better, and as you say, Luke, as you said earlier, that the promises of Alisson taking over from the main job were kind of being a little bit brushed aside. But anyway, Mercer was moved upstairs kind of against his wishes, and Alisson took the main job, which was a bad move.
I imagine he was loving it. He's loving the chance to be number one.
Yeah, well, Mercer kind of really wasn't happy and left to join Coventry not long after. And then City were on course for the title in 72, and they bought Rodney Marsh, who was a great player and also a Dean Windass Hall of Fame entrant, but it totally disrupted the side system. And they say it kind of almost cost them the championship, which they missed out by a point. So he's timed just sort of at City. As soon as he got the main job, it wasn't really what everyone was hoping for. And in 73, he surprised many people and joined Palace, who were doomed to relegation. So he took over a side that were pretty much a second division side.
Because he wanted to be the big man. He wanted to be the big fish, didn't he?
That's right, yeah. And then since he left City, it was a massive downward spiral for the man. Palace, they got relegated even to Division 3. So they weren't doing too well there. And then he got his friend and fellow student of the game, Terry Venables, in as player coach, and together they got Palace to the FA Cup semi-finals at 76, which was a huge achievement. But while at Palace, though, his womanising and his drinking and gambling and all became
he was in London, for crying out loud.
It became quite prominent in the tabloids, and he had a number of relationships with, I think there's a couple of celebrities, a couple of Miss UKs. And also in 1976, he received a Football Association disrepute charge after the News of the World photograph appeared of him in the Crystal Palace's bath with the porn star Fiona Richmond, who he'd invited to a training session.
We've all done it.
Yeah. We've all done it. Cassano's done it, hasn't he?
Yeah. The amount of times I bring a lady to this recording session.
See, Jim, Cassano's done it. Again, ahead of his time.
Well, Venable said of this incident, he said, "I was in the bath with all the players, and we heard the whisper that Fiona was coming down the corridor. So we all leapt out and hid because we knew there'd be photos."
Where
and
that do you hide in a bathroom?
We all leapt out and hid because we all knew there'd be photos and that wouldn't go down too well. Malcolm and Fiona, however, just dropped everything and got in the bath. That's
why
the manager.
Was there pictures in the bath? They knew there'd be photographs. Where'd you hide in a bath? There's so many questions.
Well, clearly yeah. They've gone out the bath and then gone into the chain.
It's almost like he's
take much, Pete.
It's almost
on.
It's almost like he's thought, I will get photographed and it's going to be bad, but you know, I will be with a porn star, so you know, sod it.
I will want to remember this.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, he's meant to be setting the example. The players have even gone, no, this is too much. And the manager, hit off, in we go.
Yeah.
Does
ahead of his time. They're all doing it now.
Yeah. And apparently also, though, because he was a handsome chap, many of the wives of the football directors wanted a piece of him. Yeah. Can you believe? Handsome man like that.
You know what it's like, Marcus, don't you?
And there was a tale where apparently he gave in to temptation. With one of the women, and after the deed, he heard her ring her husband, and all he heard from the wife say to the husband on the phone, "I've just spent the afternoon in bed with Malcolm Allison."
Stitch up!
Oh my god!
Stitch up! He's thinking, absolute stitch up!
Oh my day!
Yeah,
it's a good job there aren't ladies like that who hang around footballers.
Well, after
she was ahead of her time.
This whole thing's incredible.
Yeah.
They're visionary.
Yeah, they are visionaries. Yeah.
Well, he resigned from Palace and then he became manager of Galatasaray for a brief stint. Then back to Plymouth Chalk for a brief stint.
What did he do? Like make off with a chairman's daughter or something?
I've no idea, pal. I've no idea. But and then he returned to Manchester City, but unfortunately, he failed to win any of his first 12 games and he was sacked there. So he was not doing very well, as you can see. Then he went to Sporting Lisbon and he rediscovered his touch there. Because in the one and only season he was there, he won the league and the cup.
Nice.
So had some success in Portugal.
And which then Jose Mourinho went on to do. So again, visionary.
Now, it's funny you mention him, James.
Didn't used to win
funny,
in Portugal.
Funny you mention Jose. He was asked to leave, I think, Sporting, of alleged indiscipline. I think we can all conjure
how
up.
How old is he at this point?
That was early 80s. and he was born in 27.
His early 80s.
He had a few more jobs after that, but most notably, Portuguese side. Victoria Setúbal, where he worked with Jose Mourinho.
Oh, there's your link.
Yeah. Now Mourinho wasn't on. Was he in the coaching staff? Mourinho was there. I think Mourinho's father played in goal for that team. I think. The Middlesbrough conditioning coach, Roger Spry, who worked with Alisson as well, gave an interesting insight into Alisson with his work at in Portugal. As he was there with him, and he said that, "I can see Malcolm's influence on Jose Mourinho. He is the best coach in the world, and I can see Malcolm in 90% of the things he does."
Wow.
I'm mad.
That is incredible.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
He also said that, kind of sort of summing up Alisson, he said, in one sense he was a fraud in the fact that this flamboyant character to the media and the public, which he portrayed, but in private he was a quiet man and one of the most knowledgeable coaches I've ever worked with. And I've worked with some of the best managers in the business, including Jose Mourinho and Arsene Wenger, and I would put Malcolm in that category. He was really that good. And his last job was at Bristol City in the early 90s. And after that, unfortunately, he suffered with all sorts of problems and mental health problems and one thing or another. And he died in a nursing home on the 14th of October 2010 at the age of 83. But in 2007, the Crystal Palace fans organised a tribute to Alisson, which they named Fedora Day. They set up a campaign and so on and so forth. And this was, I think it was the 31st anniversary of their famous cup run, which Alisson masterminded. And all the fans came out sporting the fedoras and smoked cigars and drank champagne.
Nice.
Nice.
Incorporate that every week, I don't
know. Yeah. That's what we do at Pompey.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Can we do that?
No, sorry, that's what Peter Story does at Pompey.
But Alisson, of course, he'll be remembered for being just an incredible showman, one of football's first great showmen, and for his trademark cigar and fedora. And I shall end with a quote from the great Bobby Moore, who said, "Malcolm had taught me everything I know. When he was coaching schoolboys, he took a liking to me when I don't think anyone else at West Ham saw anything special in me. I looked up to the man. It's not too strong to say I loved him."
Oh,
come on in.
Come in, Matt. Big Mal.
Big Mal.
Welcome.
You get yourself a drink.
Yeah. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of the Football Ramble. I hope you've had a lovely time. If you want to get in touch, the email address is podcast@thefootballramble.com. And of course, the website is thefootballramble.com. Come on in and get on the forum and read the blogs, magnificent blogs from some wonderful writers.
We've also just announced our Ramble Christmas drinks. Venue to be confirmed, but it'll be sort of central London somewhere. We'll furnish you with that information when we have it. But it'll be the Saturday, the 18th of December from 12 p.m.
Marvellous.
Get your emails in with your names or just click attending on the Facebook group to ensure entry. And get there early because it'll be limited capacity again.
That's right, yeah, yeah. And James, what can they play with us whilst live matches are being shown on the television?
Street Fighter. You can do anything online now. Do you mean Pick Live?
Well, I was alluding to that.
All right, yeah, yeah. Street Fighter is brilliant, obviously, but Pick Live is also really fun and probably more relevant if you're watching football at the time. So, yeah, it's footballramble.picklive.com.
Thefootballramble.picklive.com.
The is important. Well done, Marcus.
Thanks.
The Street Fighter 2. On the forum,
yes.
I would like to thank Socrates Beard for starting the Photoshop thread.
Oh, that's that was brilliant.
It's flattered our egos and a lot of my family's puke glands.
The best thing about it, the way my ego's been flattered the most is when that someone did a Photoshop picture of us as actual Thundercats and I was Lion-O.
Because you look like a freaking lion.
Like a lion.
Yeah, you say that, but it's actually because I'm the leader.
We'd also like to say thank you to Neil Callister. Marcus, why is that?
Oh yeah, I think I know Neil. He was on the Spain tour when I was out in Spain for a little bit with Ambassadors in Sport. Him and his student team, they sent off one of the guys to go and get them a new football kit. And he came back and he didn't tell them what they had. First game of the season, brings it out, a bright pink all kit, socks, shorts and top. And they won
there.
And no, but a brilliant pink.
Okay.
Yeah. Not a faded pink. And they won, and that's their kit. Well done, the boys.
Yeah, good well stuff.
All for that.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Marvellous.
We should thank Steve and Sarah from Umbro as well.
Yes, of course.
Took us to Man City.
Absolutely. Lovely couple. Mm. Beautiful. Is that all, chaps? Any more for any more?
I've got no one specific to thank.
Thank God.
Thank all of you lot for being here.
Yeah. Well, there we are. James or Jim, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Pete, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Luke, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
We're all off for a bath with a porn star.
What's his name?
Hey.
I am the best rambler. I contribute the
in
most.
This seat.
I am the funniest. I am definitely the most knowledgeable. And I get fancied by most of the girls. The best. The best.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts?
Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.